Parshas Kisavoy. There's a very, very fascinating Balaturim. Let's begin with this Balaturim. And the Balaturim connects last week's Parsha that ends with Timcha Zeicha Molech with the beginning of this week's Parsha that deals with the Bikurim. It's a very strange Balaturim. Look at this Balaturim. It's a tremendous Chidushim he has here. Kisavoy, says the Balaturim, Ksiv Le'el Minei. It says earlier on, the previous parasha, it said Timcha Zeicha Molech. Yep. V'somech lei v'hoyo kisovei el ha'oretz. And it says, after Timcha Zeicha Molech, it talks about coming into Eretz Yisrael and fulfilling the mitzvah bikurim. Sh'nistavu limcheis zeicha molech miyad b'knisosam la'oretz. It's a mitzvah of destroying a molech as soon as you come into Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah to make yourself a king, get yourself an army, and to destroy a molech. So he says, Alzer shirotza la'akev bi'osam la'oretz. And therefore, he did everything he could possibly do to stop Klal Yisrael coming into Eretz Yisrael, because he knows that once Klal Yisrael comes into Eretz Yisrael, it's all over, they're going to make a melech, they're going to go and fight him. So what did he do? Shehu higid lemelech Mitzrayim ki baracha om. Who was it that told Paroi that Klal Yisrael ran away? It was Amalek. That brings Mechilta says that already. But it was Amalek. Amalek was the one to tell Paroi that ki baracha om, that the nation ran away. V'chein higid lelovon ki barach Yaakov. So too, Amalek was the one who told Lavon that Yaakov ran away. V'alkein somach le parshas bikurim. And that is why we talk about parshas bikurim next to Timcha Zeicha Amalek. Shemazkir bo Arami oived ovi, because we talk about in parshas bikurim the whole story of Arami, how he wanted to kill Yaakov, who instigated that attack or attempted attack. That was Amalek. And therefore, says a parasha, says a Balaturim, that we connect now the parasha of Timcha Zeicha Molech with the parasha of Bikurim that talks about Arami Oved Avi. Make sense? Obviously, there's one tremendous kasha.
So, remember Amalek before you come to him, before it says when you come to Israel. Remember Amalek, and then afterwards it says when you come to Israel.
Yeah, that could be remember. Them now, that when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, destroy them.
Paro knew, and I'm sure that's
right. How did he know?
He sent them. Don't get the heck out of it.
But he could be there on the way back. Only a little bit delayed. Jewish meantime. A little bit late. Look, a little bit delayed. But who said they're actually running away the opposite direction?
Wait. Doesn't the Quran only apply to after you've inherited the whole land?
Okay.
So I thought you said that what was the reason again that.
The Amalek did everything it possibly could to prevent Klal Yisrael coming to Eretz Yisrael, because it knew when they come to Eretz Yisrael, they're destroyed. So that's what he's saying over here. Timcha Zeicha Amalek, v'hoyo kisovei la'oretz, that Arami Oved Ovi, he did everything he could possibly do along the way to prevent us coming to Eretz Yisrael in the first place. That way he knew he'd be safe, and that's why Timcha Zeicha Amalek is connected to v'hoyo kisovei la'oretz and Lov and Garti.
The mitzvah of only happened after the
time. Of course. When did the mitzvah Timcha Zeicha Molech? When did the Pasuk say Mochei Emcha Zeicha Molech? When was that? That was a Melchama that Amalek had later. Much, much later. And Klal Yisrael made the way out of Mitzrayim. They came and attacked Klal Yisrael. And that's when the Pasuk said Mochei Emcha Zeicha Molech. Wipe them out. Beforehand, doesn't say anywhere mitzvah Bechlal, doesn't say anywhere that Amalek is going to be destroyed. So why should they feel vulnerable already at the time of Lavon and the time of Paroi when they haven't yet even made Melchama? And what are they doing? What's going on over here? What's Peshat in the Balaturim? What's Peshat in the Balaturim? The interesting thing is that we find the connection between Amalek and Bikurim is a concept of Rashis. We find in Parshas Balak, if I remember correctly, Rashis Goyim Amalek. Amalek or Rashis Goyim. They are the Rashis, the choice, the first of the Goyim Amalek. They represent Goyim. Here we talk about Rashis called Pri Adamo. The Rashis of Pri Adamo. What's the connection between Amalek and the Kurim? What's the idea behind this? Chazal say, Bereshis Bora Elikim. Bereshis Bara Elokim, says Shemayim Esa'aretz, says a Medrash. Bereshis Bara Elokim, Yisrael Shnikra Rashis, Ubishlo Bikurim Shnikra Rashis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shemayim Va'aretz, all the billions and billions of stars, all everything that's in the world because of Bikurim Shenikra Reishis. Because of this mitzvah, you know, if I would have had the famous five, you know, the five most popular mitzvahs of the Tchola Torah Kula, Hashem's worth creating Shemayim Va'aretz, maybe Kibud Av Va'Em, maybe Shabbos, yeah, but Bikurim, big deal. And it is a big deal. The Mishnah talks about in Sechus Bikurim how Klal Yisrael would make a big deal to go into the center of the town, they all go together and they decorate their cows with fruit, and everyone will come out and greet them and send them up. It was a big deal. Why is this such a big deal? Why is Bikurim so special? So the Alshech HaKadosh says that Bikurim is one of the most difficult mitzvahs to keep. And Bikurim, with the concept of what Bikurim is, gives us an entirely new understanding in who we are and what achiyuvim are in this world. The Darka Musa brings down, works in the Alshech, and it says, Anoichi Hashem lekecha asher hoitzei sichel meres Mitzrayim. I am a Kodesh Baruch Hu who took you out of Mitzrayim. It does not say, Anoichi Hashem lekecha asher borosh mayim v'oretz. To know that Kodesh Baruch Hu created heaven and earth, you've got to be an idiot not to understand that. To a person to believe, really to believe in evolution, he himself is a monkey. There's no doubt he's a missing link. But to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and He runs the world, that He is the one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who does everything that I believe I am doing, that is godless. For a person to work backbreakingly, he goes to his field and he works and he nourishes, he plants and he plows and he plants and he sows and he works and he waters it and he weeds it, and eventually he finally has his tevuah. And he says, Rabbeinu Shleinam, you know what? I think it's mine, I'm telling you it's not, it's all yours. You gave me this land, you gave me this koyach, you gave me this seichel, you gave me everything. I have no koyach but to you. To do such a thing, to appreciate Rabbeinu Shleim is in control, that Kosh Baruch Hu runs a teva ho'ilam, didn't just create it, but He runs it. Everything in this world is from Rabbeinu Shleim. That is a tremendously difficult thing to do. And that is why the scientists do anything they possibly can with the strangest kind of theories not to believe in the world's creation and that Kosh Baruch runs the world. Why? Because ultimately, if you believe Hashem created the world and if you believe Hashem runs the world, we have a responsibility. What's the responsibility? We have a debt of gratitude. A debt of gratitude is exactly what it means. It's a debt. It's a chayv. It's very, very difficult for a person to deal with a debt. Koichi v'aitzim is the easiest thing to do. The Pasuk says, Vamarte Elov. Pasuk later on it says, Vamarte Elov. And I will say, it says Rashi, Vamarte Elov, She'enu Kofi Toiv. I'm not a Kofi Toiv. Va'anisa Loshen Haromas Koil. That I say it out loud. What's these two parts? Okay? Let's understand this carefully. This parasha is all about identifying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a source of everything that goes on in this world. If that's the case, I, as a very, very small bria of that Ribbono Shel Olam, have a chrais, an obligation to fit in to the demands of Ribbono Shel Olam. Not only do I have to appreciate it, but I have to say out loud, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam, it's from you, and live my world that way. Let's go through the parasha. It's a fascinating parasha. Let's go through the parasha and see how exactly Ribbono Shel Olam expects us to get the message of Hashem runs the world and HaKadosh Baruch Hu through this parasha. The parasha is a parasha that you're familiar with, not necessarily from our Besedra, but familiar with. Where else do we say this parasha? Where else do we have this parasha of Bikurim? Of the Haggadah. Haggadah Shal Pesach. Arami Oyved Aviv Yeri Mitzvayim V'Yogo Shal Mitzvayim Ma'at. We take this parasha apart and we split it up bit by bit, and we explain every single part of the parasha. That is the main backbone of the Haggadah. Let's understand this carefully. Okay, let's go through this parasha, and it's a fascinating thing. We are saying to Rabbeinu Shel Olam, thank you very much for what I have now. Thank you, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, for giving me a field. Thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, for giving me the capacity to be able to work in this field and bring you fruits. Why, Rabbi Sait, have to go all the way back to Arami Oivadovi? Why do we have to start talking about love on Arami? Arami Oived Ovi. No, what's Agav, what's Arami Oived Ovi? What does it mean? Arami Oived Ovi. What's Oived Ovi? What does it mean?
Is it the Aleph?
With the Aleph. Oived Ovi. No, what's Oived mean?
Destroy.
So it's different pshatim. Oived Ovi, most pshatim mean Arami Oived Ovi. In Aram Narayim, Oived got lost, our fathers. Okay? And Aram Narayim, he got lost. Okay, different pshatim, Arami Oived Ovi. But be that as it may, Arami Oived Ovi, who do we start talking about who wants to destroy Klal Yisrael? Lavan wanted to go out and kill Yaakov and take back all his children. Okay, Arami Oived Ovi. Rabbi Yisrael Avakasha. If you're already starting going back in history, digging up all those enemies that wanted to destroy us, why not talk about Terach? Terach wanted to kill Avram Avinu because he broke down the Avodah Zarah of his father. And if you don't want to go back in history, just talk about the present and the future. Why go back and dredge up the past of Rami Oived Ovi? Wow! And not only that, it's not by Bikurim. Every year we're sitting down with a family at a Seder, and you've got the father sitting with his kittel and all the little children, and we start talking about Lavan Arami. That is what we start talking about. Lavan. Talk about Yisias Mitzrayim. Talk about the present and the future we have to be grateful for. Arami Oived Ovi, going back to Lavan Arami. He wasn't a very popular guy, big deal. But Arami Oived Ovi, what's the story behind that? The territory is like this. Hakara Satov is not just saying thank you. Hakara Satov is not just saying thank you. Hakara Satov is not saying, you did me a favor, thank you. Hakara Satov is Hakarat Hatov. Hakara, well, Hakara means appreciating the good. Acknowledging the good. Acknowledging the good means that if you did me a favor, and I acknowledge that, means that I am indebted to you to pay you back somehow. You did me something, I somehow feel now indebted to you. It's a debt of gratitude. It's very hard for a person to walk around with debts. A person saves somebody's life. The whole life, he doesn't know what to do for him, he feels indebted. It's an amazing thing. A person helps somebody do tshuva. It's an incredible thing. It's a debt of gratitude is very, very difficult to walk around with this debt. It's a blank check, because why? You never know when that person's going to start cashing in on that favour. Remember, I saved your life? Well, you know, now I need XYZ, please help me. You never know. You're walking around with a debt. It's very, very difficult to walk around with a debt. So what does one do with that? How does one deal with that debt? The first way of dealing with it is denial. You deny there ever was a debt. There was a debt. For sure something happened, you deny it. You know, some small favor, the person doesn't mind to have a debt of gratitude. Even that people don't like. You know, men don't like to ask for directions in the car. You know, if they go round and round, they say, if at least Columbus would have asked directions, we would never discovered America. Yeah? That people don't like to ask, because I've got to say thank you to you, I don't want to say thank you, I don't want to have a debt to you, I'll work things out myself, thank you. But sometimes people need others, and therefore they have a debt of gratitude. What do? You deny it. Who was the classic Kofi Toiv? Lavan Arami. It's brought down the posuk that Rochel went out to feed the sheep. The Shem Shmuel says this. He went out to feed the sheep. Why did Rochel do it? What about his sons? The Teretzis never had any sons. Lavan acknowledges Yaakov, and he says, please stay with me, that Kosh Baruch will give me blessing because of you. In other words, all my Siyat Dishmaya will come because of you, Yaakov Avinu. He acknowledges that Yaakov Avinu is the source of all his bracha. What happens later on? He suddenly has children. Later on he has children, Yishmael, Divrei B'nei Lavan. He see he has sons. He got Parnosa through Yaakov Avinu. He got children because of Yaakov Avinu. He got grandchildren because of Yaakov Avinu. What wonderful life he had because of Yaakov Avinu. What does it say later on in the parasha? He runs off to Yaakov Avinu. Lavan Arami Oived Ovi, what does he want to do? Says the parasha, he says to him, Yaakovina, after Yaakovina said to him, Zeh Esrim Shana worked for 20 years, and what did I get from this just hassle? What did he say to him? Vayoyma Lavan, Vayoyma Yaakov, Habonais Benoisai, Vabonais Benoisai, Habonim Bonai, Hatsoin, Soini, Vacholasha to Roya Lihu. You've done nothing for me. Everything is from mine. It's mine. The daughters are mine. My sons are mine. Your sons are mine. Your daughters are, your wives are mine. The sheep are mine. Nothing is from you. I don't know you. Get out of my life. That's Rami Oived Ovi. The first level of learning our Kosh Tov in this parasha, of waking up and appreciating, that's not Koyich Avotzim Yadi. There's a Chiyuv of Haronas Koil. There's a Chiyuv to stand up and appreciate and say thank you, Rabbeinu Shleilom, is to learn from Lavan Arami. not to be like him, not to be a kofi toiv, not to be someone who denies the good. Lavan is exactly that. He denied anything Yaakov Avinu did for him was good. Same thing happened with Mitzrayim. Yosef saved Mitzrayim. Not only that, Yosef saved the whole world because of, and through Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim came a huge monopoly that took over the whole world's food. And he brought them up and he saved them. What happens? Yochem Melechodosh Ashul Yodeh Yosef. Completely denies Yosef ever existed. That is one way of dealing with a debt of a Karos HaToiv. Denying it. I don't know who you are. So the parasha begins telling us about a Karos HaToiv and tells us about Lavan Arami. Dafka Lavan Arami, not Terach. Terach wasn't a Karos HaToiv. Lavan was a Karos HaToiv, and typical Kofi Toiv is Lavan. And that is why we begin the parasha Lavan Arami Dafka. Another way of denying to be kofi toiv is simply minimizing the favor in the first place. The person, the reason why he lent me the money is because the money is safe in my hands and in his hands. If I have it and it gets stolen from me, I have to pay him back. If it gets stolen from him, he loses the money. The person's going to go and is going anyway that direction, gave me a lift, probably needs it for the company. It's minimizing the good. That's kfiyas toiv. The Gemara says a good oireach says everything about a boss did he did for me. Okay, but there's another way of also unfortunately dealing with a debt of gratitude, and that is time. Sometimes a person has a difficulty in life. He can't find a shidduch, and he's going to this shadchanit, to that shadchan. He's going out with this girl, going out with that boy. It's finding it very, very, very difficult in finding a shidduch. And finally, somebody meets him at a Shabbos table. Offers him a fantastic shidduch, work through the process with him, and they get engaged. And this boy is already 34, 35. Can you imagine the simcha atzuma, the unbelievable simcha he has? Baruch Hashem, fantastic, he got engaged. And at the chasna, he danced with that shadchan and they're hugging and kissing. Ah, gewaldig, what a fantastic simcha. A person has a difficulty in Nebuch giving birth. And they go to an organization that helps them through the process of painful process of childbearing. And eventually they have a child, and at the bris. Can you imagine the simcha? Can you imagine the appreciation they have for those organizations? But what happens over time is a person forgets. And a person gets, Baruch Hashem, they're married, and they have one child, and they have two children, and 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 years later, they've almost forgotten what the shadchan's done. What the parasha is telling us over here is that another extremely important element of a Karos HaToiv is trying to get back to where you were originally. How are you going to remember what a Karos HaToiv you owe that shadchan? Go back to a position where you were previously. You know, last week I was in Gateshead, went for a chasna, and time moves on. Baruch Hashem, time moves on, and I've left Gateshead 17 years ago. I left Gateshead Yeshiva. And I sat in the same place that I sat 17 years ago in Yeshiva. And I was back in the middle of Zman, Edel Zman, with Tekir Shefer, Ochos Chaim Larosh. I was back in like a time warp. We went back in time. And then I was overwhelmed with a Karos HaToiv. That how far I'd come from that time sitting in that seat as a Bocher to where Baruch Hashem I am today. But you sometimes need to go back to that position, see where you are, and then you have a Karos HaToiv. I want to read you out an incredible, incredible story about Rav Shach. This is in the book Reflections of the Maggid. I may have said it in the past, but I believe this is one of the most beautiful stories of Rav Shach. I can't say it over as well as I can read it, so I'll read it out to you. When Rav Aryeh Zev Ginsberg, Rav of the Chofetz Chaim Torah Center in Cedarhurst, New York, studied in Israel, he established a close relationship with numerous Torah sages, particularly with the Gadol HaDor, the Rosh Hashiva Oponovitch Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, Rav Lezer Menachem Shach. Rav Ginsberg often came to Rav Shach's home to consult with him, and in the course of these visits, he became friendly with the Rosh Hashiva's attendants and family members. One afternoon in December 1976, Rabbi Ginsberg came to Rav Shach's home, but was told that he would not be able to see the great sage. "Not even you can get in today," Rav Shach's grandchild said softly but firmly. Rabbi Ginsburg was surprised. Is everything all right? Is the Roshiva feeling well? He is recuperating from yesterday, came the reply. Yesterday was a very hard day for the Zaydi, and today he must rest. The grandson then told the following story. Yesterday had been cold and nasty. As windswept rain battered Bnei Barak, in the middle of the storm, Shach called his grandson and said, please arrange a car for me. I have to travel to a town near Haifa. The grandson protested, but Zaydi, the weather is terrible, and you can get sick on a day like this. If you don't arrange a car for me, said Shach, I'll go myself and take a bus. I must go to a Leviah near Haifa. Who died? Said the grandson. He hadn't heard of any prominent Rosh Hashiva or rabbi whose death would warrant Reb Shach's making such an arduous 2-hour trip. A certain woman passed away and I must go to a Leviah, Reb Shach said. Please arrange the car. The grandson recognized how serious his grandfather was and arranged the car and drive immediately. When he inquired about the woman's identity, Reb Shach refused to give any information. The grandson knew better than to press the issue. The trip to the cemetery in the north took over 2 hours. The grandson was positive that he would find a large crowd in attendance to pay final respects to this important woman, whoever she was. Surely if Reb Shach himself at his advanced age insisted on making this trip, the woman deserved great honour. Yet to his amazement, there was barely a minion there. True, the weather was bad, the rain had not let up and the temperature was close to freezing, but still, so few people. Why did his grandfather insist on attending this funeral? Upon inquiry, his grandson found out that the woman had no children, few relatives, and that most of her friends had already passed on. Some distant relatives had a few neighbours had gathered to pay final respects. The funeral was short, sad, and simple. When it was over, Reb Shach recited the mourner's Kaddish. The pelting rain continued as the wind howled in the vast, lonely expanse of the cemetery. The driver who brought them was waiting nearby, and the grandson ushered Reb Shach to the waiting car. Suddenly, Reb Shach stopped walking. He let go of his grandson's hand and closed his eyes. His shoulders hunched in the cold as the rain dripped from his hat and coat. The grandson waited a few moments and then tried to get his grandfather to go to the car. Reb Shach shook his head, indicating that he is not yet ready to leave. He stood in the rain, shivering, immersed in his thoughts, and then made his way to the car. Throughout the long trip back, Reb Shach hardly spoke, and his grandson realized that Reb Shiva did not want to speak, and he remained silent. When he finally got home, the grandson could not contain his curiosity. Zaydi, he said, who was that great woman? And why did he have to go to a Leviah? Reb Shach told his grandson a story that few people, if any, had ever heard from him before. When he was merely 12 years old, it was announced that Yeshiva for Iluyim was opening. The Rosh Yeshiva was extremely selective, and every applicant was carefully scrutinized and tested. Each bocher was informed that if he could not rent a room, he would have to make do with the meager living conditions in the Yeshiva. This meant that the older boys would have the luxury of being able to sleep on the benches, while the others would have to sleep on the floor. Food was sparse but edible. Most of the successful applicants were already in their teens. Reb Shach at 12 was one of the youngest boys accepted. But despite his age, he was allowed to sleep on a bench. Undoubtedly, it was because he was recognized as his brilliance and piety. During the spring, summer and fall, the situation was tolerable. But in the freezing winter, the days were hardly tolerable and the nights were unbearable. There was no place in the building where the boys could keep warm, and the constant pangs of hunger accentuated by the poor living conditions. The boy was exhausted from lack of sleep and it affected his learning. On Wednesday, he received a letter from his uncle. Come, join in my business. The uncle, his mother's brother, was a prosperous blacksmith. He had no children and was getting on in his years. He assured his young nephew that he would teach him the trade and eventually the business would be his. Why stay where you're in poverty and hunger if you can come and join me and be set up for life? For more than a day, the young Talmud mulled over the letter. By Thursday night, he decided that his uncle was right. Things were too difficult in the yeshiva. He could join his uncle's business and still make time for learning. He decided he would stay in yeshiva for Shabbos and leave straight after Havdalah. Friday morning, a woman came into the Beis Medrash and spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva. She explained that she had gotten up from sitting shiva for her husband. My husband was a salesman, she told the Rosh Yeshiva, and he travelled far and wide to buy and sell his wares. Last week when he was travelling, his horse and carriage was turned over and he was killed. We lived far away from here, but I came here to sit shiva with his family. He sold blankets, and a few of them are with me. I have no interest in bringing them back to my home. I won't be able to sell them, and I have no need for them. Take them for your Talmidim. She brought a few heavy Russian blankets filled with goose down, known as perners, and gave them to the Rosh Hashiva. The Rosh Hashiva gave one of them to Reb Shach. That Friday night, I was warmer than I had been all winter, said Reb Shach. When I woke up in the morning, I decided that with this heavy blanket I could survive the cold winter, so I stayed in the yeshiva, and I've been very close to abandoning learning, but because that woman brought the blankets when she did, I stayed where I was. From then on, there's never a question where I would direct my life. The woman had a sad life. She went back to her hometown, unfortunately never remarried. Later she moved to Eretz Yisrael and I heard that she lived in Haifa. When I heard that she had passed away, I felt that I had to be at the Leviah. The grandson never heard this story before and answered every question but one. But Zaidi, why after the Leviah did you go back and why did not go back into the car straight away? Why were you standing out there in a cold and rain? Rishach's answer was classic and instructive. It has been so many years since the incident with the blankets, he said. Over the years, one tends to forget the way things were, and so I wanted to stay out in the cold to remind myself how freezing I was in those days, so that I could have the proper Koros HaTov to the woman for all that she did. Abayisai, that's Rav Shach. And that's Rami Ovidovi. Rami Ovidovi is going all the way back to the times that we were slaves, and saying, Rabbeinu Shleilam, we are where we are today, we're wealthy farmers, but remember where we started off with absolutely nothing. Where even our father-in-law wanted to kill us. That's a Rami Ovidovi. That's another level of a Koros HaTov. Of trying to get back to where you were before. Not denying the favor like Lavan Arami. Another element over here. Getting back to where you were. Now, there's another element over here as well that gets in the way of Koros HaTov. And that is Rabbi Isai. Making the person look bad, the person who gave you that favor. There's a Gevaldige Diuk, which my favorite, Rav Zalman Sorotzkin, says a Moridige Diuk. It says in the parasha, Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. What do you mean, Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim? Literally translating, Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. Perek Chavov, Posuk Vov. Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. Fancy, Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. What does it mean? Literally. Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim means, and the Mitzrim made us bad. Correct? They made us bad. In the other psukim, when the Klal Yisrael sent a message to Melech Edom, it said, Vayareyu Lonu HaMitzrim. The Mitzrim were bad to us. So why do you say Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim in Parshas Bikurim? And the Mitzrim made us bad. What's Pshat? Says the Zalman Sorotzkin, a fantastic vort in the Zalman Torah. He said, you know why? Because when Mitzrayim wanted to take a nation that saved Mitzrayim's life, that brought prosperance to Mitzrayim, that made them a nation that were powerful and controlling, how do you do that? How do you take Mitzrayim? How does Mitzrayim take a nation like Klal Yisrael, who they're heroes, and enslave them? What do you do? How does a Germany take Klal Yisrael, who have helped them so many years in finance and in business and in intellectual pursuits, and take them and make them become, Rahman al-Islam, the fuel in the ovens? How do you do that? The teretz is, Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. They made us look bad. Yeah, these aren't people. These people want to destroy us. If a war will come, they'll be the first people who want to destroy us. We've got to get rid of them. Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. The Mitzrayim made us look bad. And that is how they were able to destroy us. That is how they were able to take a nation that were heroes and be able to destroy us the way they are. United Nations. You can't go out and say, Jews, we hate you. What we can do is, we can make Israel look bad at every single situation. When ships come through trying to break a blockade that is stopping arms coming through, we can say they're terrible. And we can say the Jews, look at it, not Jews, Chas v'Shalom, but Israelis are doing terrible things. And eventually, one thing leading to the other, where Israel loses legitimacy and it can have United Nations recognizing a Palestinian state of murderers. But that's the way to do it. Vayareyu Oisonu HaMitzrim. They made us look bad. It's not only Mitzrim. It's sometimes where a person has a Koros HaTov and the debt is so great that he begins to hate the person who did the favor to him. And he looks for every little bad element of that person that can use his anger and hate to hate that person. How many Talmidim has Yeshiva helped? And Rachman al-Islam sometimes, not only do they not appreciate and say thank you, but they have tainas. Why? Because the debt is so great. And that's what happens. That's what happens sometimes. Vayareyu Oisonu make us bad. I think Kirk Douglas would say, if I lend you money and you can't pay me back, at least don't hate me for lending you that money. My father once walked in the street with Dr. Schoenfeld. Dr. Schoenfeld arranged for thousands and thousands of children to make it through the kinder transport to England. My father was walking in the street with him, and he said Good Shabbos to somebody, and the man ignored Dr. Schoenfeld. So Dr. Schoenfeld said to that man, I've done you a favor, but not such a favor that you should hate me so much. I've saved your life, but for that you should hate me so much. That's a kliach of a Yireo Isonu HaMitzrim. That's a kliach. So basically we have three limudim. We have number one, the limud of the kliach of a chiyuv of a koros hatoiv. We have a limud of how terrible it is where a person's kofi toiv like lovon. We have the limud that over time people forget, we've got to get back to where we were and appreciate at that moment where we needed that chesed, how we were helped and appreciate that. We have also the limud over here of Zalman Sirotskin, that how Rachman al-Itzlan, a person can hate the person that did in the chesed. That is Klal Yisrael. That is what we have to learn. Who was Amalek? Who was this racious Goyim Amalek? Who were they? Who was Amalek's father? Who's Amalek's father? Anyone know who Amalek's father was? Eliphaz. Eliphaz was Amalek's father. Who was Eliphaz? The son of Esau. But what's great about Eliphaz? What story do you know about Eliphaz? The story is brought down, the Yaakov Avinu came to Laban Arami's home, destitute. According to some of Farshim, he came there naked, he had no clothes. Why? Because Eliphaz had come along and he said his father told him to kill Yaakov Avinu. Mitzvah kibbutz of aim? That's a, you know, Esau's house kibbutz of aim was a big thing. So Yaakov Avinu said, please don't kill me. Oni choshev kemes, and therefore take my money away. Now, since Eliphaz had been brought up on Yitzchok's lap, he was the Talmud of Yitzchok, so he let Yaakov get away with it, and only took all away his money, and took away his clothes, and let Yaakov walk around Rachman Litzlan in bezyonus, in embarrassment, and he didn't kill him. Big tzaddik. That was Eliphaz. And by side, he's been brought there by Yitzchok. His father's a murderer. Everyone knows Esau's a murderer. Are you Meshuggah or something? You're going out to kill Yaakov Avinu. Oh, you know what? We'll negotiate over here. We won't kill you. We'll just steal all your money. And we'll minimize your shidduchim with Lavan. Why? Because Lavan, all he has is money. And he can make him work for years after years to make up the nadan. How can he do such a thing? How can Eliphaz do such a thing? Where's his akoros hatoiv to Yitzchok? Where's his akoros hatoiv to the Rebbein Shleilom? To have such a grandfather, he has such an uncle. The teretz is, he has no akoros hatoiv. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what has to be done. He does things according to what he fancies doing right now. If I want to do something, nobody's going to stop me. That is Eliphaz. And that is Amalek. Amalek came from him. Amalek came from this upbringing. That you're blind, you have blind hate. You forget about what people have done for you in the past. You forget about the toivus you mechuyev to our brain shalim and to your parents and your family. You do what you have to do. That was the source of Amalek. And this was Amalek, Rabbi Yisai. Later on, when they came to fight with Klal Yisrael, what did they do? They jumped in and did a suicidal war. It doesn't matter whether win or lose. Koichi voitzim yodi, I'm going to win. And winning means even if I lose, I win. And they did. They made a war when nobody else dared fight with Klal Yisrael. What was the war based on? Every time Moshe Rabbeinu picked up his hands, when a Kodesh Baruch Hu was recognized, Klal Yisrael won. And when the hands went down, and Amalek began to win. Why? Because Amalek and Klal Yisrael are exact opposites. Rishis Goyim Amalek. It's about not appreciating Rebbein Shleilam. It's about Kfira. It's about fighting what we have in this world in order to realize I am in control. I am the scientist. I run the world. Rebbein Shleilam doesn't exist. And Klal Yisrael is all about putting your hands up. Whenever Klal Yisrael put their hands up and had the Munim B'tochen, Klal Yisrael won. This is the fight from the beginning of history of Amalek against Klal Yisrael. When they come into Eretz Yisrael, Amalek knew the amount of Akaris HaToiv that a person's got to have living in Eretz Yisrael is amazing. Therefore, that Akaris HaToiv is going to wipe them out. And therefore they did everything possible to make sure we never existed. Who did they go to? Who did they go to as their allies? Who did they go to? Lavan, the classic kofi toiv, correct? And as Rashi says, and they went to Paro, the classic kofi toiv. Who did use their allies? Kfiyas toiv. And that's the reason why we have Nismachol Parshas Amalek to Parshas Bikurim. Amalek is all about Kfiyas toiv, and Parshas Bikurim is all about Hakaras toiv.